welcome on the podcast.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
That's my pleasure. Simple question at the start, which is, what is meditation and why is it useful?
Yeah, meditation is when we sit with whatever comes up. So we come into a space where we don't push away problems, we don't push away emotions, thoughts. We just let everything melt, because when we are stressed, when we are busy, we're pushing away things. And then when we meditate, we turn this around. And when we do that, we come to a point where we just find peace inside. Because it's, as long as we try to push things away, they will always come back. So the only way to sort of neutralize them is to really feel them. Because it's old traumas, it's old pain that wants to be healed. So we meditate, and then we heal this old pain. Mm. We come to inner peace. And that's very useful, because then we can act in the world not from the fear and from the pain, but we can act from peace and clarity.
Mm. Awesome. And to give context to starting with that question, we just did a 5-minute meditation, and you have an incredible ability to get me into very deep space. And I've had a busy day running around. It's now 8 o'clock at night. And even just to the final minutes before clicking record, it's like trying to get my daughters to sleep. And I feel completely different after just a short time meditating together. And so for you, like, why did you start investigating meditation, and what are some of the benefits you felt from it personally?
Yeah, I tried the mainstream route of success, external success, external wealth. And funnily enough, I made it very quickly. Already at the age of 20, I made it to this stage where I felt I was successful and I had money. So then it's like, okay, I try this thing that everyone tries to do. Like on television, this is what everyone talks about, that this is what you should do. You should have success. Mm-hmm. You should have money. But when you come to this point of achieving this external success, then it's like no other place to go. Then if I want to really be happy, then I have to go inside. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's what I did about 25 years ago. Started going inside.
And you teed me up nicely there with the next question. So what do you mean by going inside?
Yeah. Good question. Let me see what comes up here. Inside. Yes, so we do have these senses. We have external senses, and every external sense has an internal sense. So it's inner seeing, inner hearing, inner feeling, inner touch. And when we start meditating, we activate these inner senses. So it's actually become sort of a place or a world where there are beings, there are places. So we start living in this. We have external reality with our external senses, and we have the inner reality with our inner senses. So it becomes a place for us to explore, to learn, things like this.
And so, Sam, so 25 years ago, you'd reached a point where you're like, what does success even mean? Essentially, you'd kicked the goal that you wanted to kick at an earlier age than I think you expected. And so how did you then start actually actioning this idea of going inside or looking inwards? was there places that you had to go or people that you had to meet or information that you had to find? I'd love to learn more about like how you tried to start solving that problem.
Yeah, I did quite a classic one. I dropped everything and I went to India. India is famous for being the place of meditation and surrendering to the universe, which is just instead of trying to go towards these goals, like I want to be that, I want to earn that, I want to have that, then it's just, okay, let's just go with the flow and just see what comes up. The people you meet. So you become sort of curious because everything is sort of sent to you from the universe. It's not you trying to create something anymore. It's just you're living in this wondrous creation and you're just curious what will show up. It can show up as ideas, intuition, where you're just like, I feel like doing that. And then you go there and do that. Or it could be people that come or opportunities that come. So rather than trying to do things, rather than doing things for goals, you turn it around and letting the external world just show you things and give you experiences. So that has been meditation courses, that has been various multidimensional teachers, and connecting with people on a similar path.
It's very confronting because it's different, at least from my upbringing and experience. The kind of the life that I grew up with in the south of the UK, the traditional culture around you, in some ways it is pretty good at, like, you know, first principle stuff, like, okay, you've got a problem, here's how you go and solve it. And it's very much about like action planning and, you know, figuring stuff out. But to say that you can live your life in a more optimal way by just allowing things to unfold is kind of the complete opposite of that. So it's very confronting in that sense. Have you found that was an experience you had as well, like having to get past that? And what are some of the benefits if you do? It's almost like an operating system change and you could upgrade to a different way of thinking. How has that felt?
Oh, it's been an ongoing process. It's sort of every turn. It's still a challenge to continue to surrender because you find these levels, you know, where you're like comfortable, and then you keep on allowing that to crumble for something new and even better to come out. So it's a lifestyle of enjoying what you have as long as you have it, but you don't hold on to it. Because when you hold on to it, it's sort of starts becoming dark, controlled. So it's a continuous journey of allowing magical things to come and not holding on to them. So when they go, it's like, okay, now they go. You just give space for something else to come in, which is the opposite of what we do in mainstream society when we try to get things and we hold on to them as long as we can. Because that's the external safety. You feel safe because you have this and you have that and you have that. But when we surrender to the universe, the safety is then moved to this belief or trust. Trust that God created this as a place for us to just discover our own potential. So it's not something we need to survive or we need to fight. But it's really like it's a positive thing, but it has these elements of light and dark that we then just, I mean, I can tell you that I had a few near-death experiences, and this has changed a lot. So when I then dropped everything and I went to India, then that's when it started really, the universe started showing me that the construct or the physical reality is just a small part of the whole creation. So when we then surrender, it's like then the creation just show us more and more what it is. So this is, I started communicating with beings in other worlds, or learning also bilocation. So bilocation is when you're meditating, but you're also in another world. So you're in two places at once. And this just becomes quite normal, where you just go to another place and experience that, like a dream, but you're awake. So what many people in the mainstream society do, they are not aware of this because they didn't surrender, so they didn't allow the universe to show how much there is. So they're living within a limited perception of this creation, and operating from patterns from the parents. So this is why it can seem very strange. Like, I've lived half my life outside of this. So I have so many thousands or millions of experiences that people in the matrix, or people in the mainstream society, they have never experienced that. So it can be sort of a clash of understanding because of having so many different experiences compared to them.
And something that I would love to learn more about then is this idea of the difference between the inner reality and the external reality. And if I reflected just on the small meditation we had together for 5 minutes before we recorded today, it was like a whole other world. Essentially, you're able to just shut down, close out the external and focus inside, and that is still a form of reality. How do you think that through, the difference between internal and external reality? And I assume that that is then the connection you've made to the bilocation. It's like, okay, with that ability, you can then be in two places at once. And that would blow 99% of people's minds to even think about as a concept, right? But please teach us more.
Yes, bilocation is sort of that you're in the external reality and the internal reality at the same time, and you're able to operate in both of these realities. But this takes a lot of time, a lot of training to do this. It was very confusing for me for a long time, and it felt like a punishment, that God punished me with this, that I was going to these other worlds. Because I didn't get really, I couldn't explain it so well. So people thought that was strange. So it felt, oh, why do I keep on going to these other worlds all the time? But then it became like a superpower when I finally figured out how to navigate both the inner world and the outer world. Because they are connected. And the inner world is like a blueprint world for the external reality. So the inner world is where all the programming is, and then the outer world is where we play out the programming. So the external world is like a simulation where we're just playing out the different patterns that we have in our blueprint. So then learning how to navigate the blueprint reality started shifting my external life radically. So, and that goes together with, you know, in the external world, I stopped going for goals. I stopped trying to achieve wealth and fame and so on. So instead, I just leveraged the inner, the blueprint reality, because then I could tune the different fields of my external reality. And then in my external reality, I would just experience better and better opportunities.
Wow. And so I think in some ways a software hardware analogy is quite useful here, because to me that's easier for me to think about. But what you're saying is you're able to, with meditation as a tool, tap into a software that is who you are today, and you can start to alter it in ways that you would prefer it to be, in the same way that a software engineer can improve the code. And the output of that is then better hardware. And then your physical reality changes too. Would that be a fair analogy to make? And if that is the case, is there any kind of specific examples you can give of where you were able to upgrade your inner reality that created a very specific external reality result?
Yeah. So we have the example of, I can't pick which example I should choose.
Maybe I could guide you a little more. Mm. I felt, having asked that question, that in some ways I was already trying to force the conversation to show me problem solution or input output. But you've already touched on the fact that it's about flow, and in some ways relaxing and releasing to the universe and allowing things to unfold. So perhaps my question is too charged already. You know, I'm like thinking about, I don't know, like a startup pitch deck or something. I'm like, come on, show me how we can figure this out better than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So let me try and scale that back in a sense. And when you get into better flow, what are some of the experiences that you've had as a result?
Yeah, thanks for that reframing, because it's this goal-orientated thing doesn't really work with this. It's not like I go inside and then I try to manipulate the universe to give me surprises. It's more like we really have to accept the path that the universe give to us. It's just that when we go inside, we can make, it's like if you have just, it's just you're staying in one path and you're doing one thing. When you go inside, you can open up to more possibilities that were not accessible before. So when we look at a company, for example, so because I work with CEOs, I work with individuals, I work with communities. And what we do then, we go in and look at the blueprint of the company. So in the company, they have sort of problems. And when, as long as they try to solve them in the external world, usually it sort of leads to even more problems, to even more problems, to even more problems. But when we look in the blueprint reality, we are able to tune the distortions, and then in the external reality the problem is solved by itself.
Interesting.
So this could be
an analogy that comes to mind. There is something that came up for me in a brilliant conversation I recorded earlier today with Simone, who will be out in the same week as yourself, where we're basically talking about medical intervention versus the natural healing process. And what you've just described is kind of similar, where the traditional medical system is very good at treating symptoms, but doesn't get to the root cause, which kind of sounds like what a company solving problems with an external only mindset might also be doing. But by being able to take an internal view as well, you can get to the root cause, and it's about harmony and flourishing, or vitality are the words that come to mind. I really love this, Sam. So it's that connection between business and the ability to navigate the inner reality. Please teach me more about how that actually works, because it seems to me business school does not teach you that to start with. So that's already very interesting. But also, there's so much endeavor that goes into business. You know, people trying so hard. You just wonder, including myself, like, that's all external. What if you were to go internal and maybe you'd get a different result?
Yeah, I would like to bring in a bigger perspective here. Mm-hmm. And that is Atlantis. Mm-hmm. So Atlantis was a thriving civilization quite some time ago. And so in my bilocation, I've been there a lot. So I'm very familiar with that culture. And that culture, actually, why it was the golden age is that it was decentralized. And it was flow-based, resonance-based. So they operated like the Bitcoin network, where each soul was sovereign. So each soul is just following their inner guidance in the resonance, in harmony with nature. And that's how they were able to actually flourish, because they then resonate with each other. They know that they are one, that we are all one, but we are still individuals. So that kind of thing is the way out of this. But what happened was then that the Atlantean culture started focusing more on the external. And they started putting up protection between each other. So they separated they forgot that they were one. So then it could be enough that just one person starts protecting, no, this is mine, I want to do this. And then other people have to also protect themselves. Okay, if that's yours, then this is mine. And then it just escalates, that people just protect themselves more and more, become more and more defensive. So when they were operating in a decentralized way, they were thriving. It was abundance. But as soon as they started separating themselves, competing, and then it was just, then greed came in, fear, conflict. So the whole planet then just descended into these lower frequencies of conflict and competition. And so the bigger picture here is that we've been living in these low frequencies as humanity for 12,000 years approximately. So, and that's what we call the matrix, or we call it the mainstream society. So I live in a world where I operate in a decentralized way. So I'm building decentralized communities where we are, again, we are remembering how it is to just live in flow and to just trust the universe and to feel this connection with the nature, with animals, and with other humans. So we are just feeling each other. And that's where we are going as a society. Again, we are coming back to this decentralization, and then the Bitcoin network, Internet, Nostr, you see decentralized things coming up now. And I see this is just as a natural evolution of us returning back to trusting the universe again after living in fear and shame and guilt for thousands of years.
Wow. I can't move past Atlantis. So when you say you have experienced bilocation and you've had the opportunity to go to Atlantis many times before, what did that feel like? And who did you meet when you were there? And like, was Atlantis a civilization here on planet Earth or on another planet entirely? And the experiences you've had, the beings that you've met, are they like an echo of the past or are they alive? Just a ton of questions come to me. So I'd love to just dig into that some more.
Yeah, so when we meditate more, we come into this timeless space. So the bilocation is really, you're just going through time and space like nothing. It's linear time. It's just a construct that we experienced in this physical body. But in the inner world, everything is happening at the same time. The only sort of limitation of the places you can go is that the frequency you have is what you can access. Because you're not controlling this bilocation. You're not saying, now I want to go to Atlantis in that period and to check out that. But it's more that you're guided, or universe is just sort of, oh, now we think you should go there, I guess they say. And I'm just shown different things, like snapshots of various cultures and various times. So I was guided then through learning about the whole Atlantean timeline. So I learned about the different ages within the Atlantean period. And then I experienced how they lived there, how they related to each other, my friends, my lovers, my wives. And I mean, yeah, I'm a little bit embarrassed, but many times I'm the king there. But it's like, because everyone is a king there, you can say, because it's decentralized. It's really about finding your inner king. And when it is a decentralized environment, everyone is free to explore their own inner king. So it's, you have like an inner kingdom that is just materialized then. In Atlantis, it was very easy to materialize this. So you had the queen and everything that you want in a kingdom. And it then you were very good friends with other kings. It was no war.
Yes. But true sovereignty implies you answer to no one. And so the idea that anyone else could be your leader doesn't make sense. I love that idea. And that's a lot of what Bitcoin does is it asks the question, well, what is sovereignty? To go back to some of the things you touched on before around Bitcoin specifically, the idea that it's... I just think that's such a fascinating connection between what we're talking about here on like a kind of spiritual level and then what is essentially 60 years worth of computer science work on top of itself and building on the shoulder of giants to then... this guy, Satoshi, he, she, they, whoever they were, has put together all the ingredients in a way that no one else had tried before. And boom, you get Bitcoin. Let's spend some time walking through that then, please, Sam. It's like you obviously had a lens on the world that you'd spend 25 years searching for answers and Bitcoin pops up. And you're like, oh, that kind of matches. Please teach us about that process for you and how that's changed your life since you've gone down that rabbit hole.
Yeah. And why not continue talking about this with kings? Because it's really like in the Bitcoin community, you have a lot of kings. It's because they are sovereign, like they have their own Bitcoin, they can do anything, they can live anywhere. The people that came in early, I mean. So it's really this freedom to be yourself and do what you love. Now, many of the Bitcoin kings are still stuck in fear patterns and doing things to get external validation and things like this. But the core of this Bitcoin network and the people around it is that they are able to create their own reality. And to do that in a way with love. I think this is sort of the goal. And this is, so the Bitcoiners are able to live in any way they want to. Now, we are now still in the transition period where they, many of them use this power to just fulfill old traumas, to live out old traumas. But as we move on, and as we clear ourselves, we go inward, we start meditating, we will just be able to express our true selves. So, coming from Atlantis and going in now to the 12,000 years of Dark Ages, and here comes Bitcoin, helping us to break free from the financial fear that has been the blanket of the whole civilization. So everyone on the planet have been like just surviving because of lack of money for thousands of years. And here comes Bitcoin, just helping people on the path towards freedom and giving them the tools to actually break out of the old society. Because yeah, Bitcoin didn't exist 25 years ago, and then so many people were stuck in the financial fear. Even if they knew, oh, they knew about Atlantis, they could go meditate, but it was always they had to work for money, which is then blocking the flow. Because, and it's a negative spiral. When you work for money, you work for fear, you produce more fear. It's just financial fear. If you believe in it, you create it and you stumble upon this more and more lack and fear. So to actually step out of it and start taking actions that are, come not from fear, but they come from purpose. Or they come from just pure inspiration from source.
I was going to say intuition. Yeah.
Intuition. So that's maybe some of my thoughts about that. Oh, it's I never even thought about this in this way. No, just improvising.
It's brilliant. And that's what these podcasts are all about. Like I really think of them as, it's like the campfire of old on steroids, in that, you know, we would pass wisdom from one generation to the next, sat around a campfire in a cave for a long time. And now we can have conversations that, in theory, millions of people can watch for basically zero cost, except for their time. My podcast journey is very early at this stage, and so this won't reach millions of people, but the concept is clear. And what I love is it's all organic. I don't script these conversations. I get the chance to ask people, you know, cool questions. And so there's so many more things I would like to ask about, and that was a brilliant answer. Thank you. The idea of blocking flow when you have to work for money, like what? I think I heard the other day that, oh, I'm going to butcher these statistics. The average American family has got no more than $1,000 to spend on a health emergency. And most Americans don't have more than $600 savings. So just taking the US economy very specifically, the average American citizen is working paycheck to paycheck every month. So they're getting blocked from their flow every single minute of every day. What does a world look like when there's no fear for money and that flow is unleashed?
Yeah. Yeah, it's possible to bypass if you're able to categorize financial fear as a noise rather than a reality. Mm-hmm. Then you're able to live without this.
Cool.
And take actions in another path. And then when the more actions you take in this direction, the less the noise is noisy.
Okay.
And so, and this is the very process I've been going through. So as I did this, I just meet more and more people that live without financial fear. And some of them are rich, some of them are poor. It doesn't really matter. The matter is that they don't make decisions from fear or guilt or shame or financial fear. Because they have understood that when you do that, you just perpetuate. You make it stronger. So if you can get that as an intellectual understanding, you can start that journey where it's like, oh, you wake up and you feel financial fear. Okay, what do you do then? Do you then act on this? But if you have the mental construct saying, if you act on financial fear, you only amplify it. So why would you do that? Why would you amplify it? Because then the next day you will have even more. And it doesn't matter how many millions you have on the bank, because it's a field. It's a financial fear field. And it's about learning how to understand that field and heal that field instead of acting on it. So, and when we do this, we just meet more and more people that operate on this other operating system. So we only do what we are truly inspired to do. If we get the financial fear, it could come from a person, or it's these collective fields. It's like your Monday morning, it's like the whole planet goes into financial fear. But when you know this, when you feel the difference, you feel the difference between inspiration and financial fear. And you have the mental construct that if you act on financial fear, you will only amplify it. Then you can sit with it or you can ignore it, whatever it takes. And then just enjoy life until you get inspired. And then when you're inspired, you do what you're inspired to do. And slowly, slowly, you start creating wonderful projects, not based in fear, but based in love. And that other people connect and they feel the love. They want to be part of the love. And we're building this parallel world or a new world based on love instead of fear.
Awesome. If I could use myself as the guinea pig in a sense, this podcast is an investment podcast, but I've evolved in terms of what I think an investment actually is. And I understand now that there are different things you can invest into, whether that be your health, whether that be, as I call it, intellectual capital, and how you've just described the ability to basically sidestep financial fear with a mindset and how that works. It's a great example of an intellectual investment. It's like that can be the best investment you ever make, is that ability to sidestep a piece of trauma like that that's dragging your frequency and vibration down. But speaking to Bitcoin specifically, as it's become a bigger and bigger allocation in a portfolio of mine, the lower my financial stress has become. And there are still things in my life that I want from a financial perspective that I can't buy because I don't have enough money to buy them. That's just reality. But I actually can't remember the last Monday when I woke up and was like, fuck, got to like get to work or whatever. So it's absolutely been the case for me personally that Bitcoin has helped to solve that problem and to reduce financial fear in my life. And it's one of the reasons why I advocate for it so strongly, because it's like it really has changed my life. And with that process, I've then been able to investigate other areas of my life, such as this conversation we're having right now. And where I'd like to go next is something that's almost like a devil's advocate point, but you mentioned often the word fear. And on some levels, fear is probably a good thing, right? Like, shit, there's a saber-toothed tiger in the camp. Get the fuck out of here. Like, that fear would have meant you survived. Please help us pull apart what you mean by fear and how you try to manage it in how you go through daily life. And like, actually, isn't fear a good thing? Because it saves your life sometimes.
Yes, it's maybe instead of talking about fear, we can talk about projections. Because the thing is, when we switch the operating system, we open our hearts and we feel everything. So we feel the true nature of the person. We feel the true nature. And then children have this naturally also. So they can go into forest. They feel the frequency of the forest. So when we become these feeling creatures or empathic humans, we actually feel everything. We feel a podcast before it happens. We feel a room, a building. We feel a person that we're going to meet. And this is how they also operated in Atlantis. So you allow the energy to go before you, and then the physical body comes there. So this means fear and all these things, it's part of the perceptual construct, which is based on past experience. It's like mental models that we used to navigate the world. But that was during the Dark Ages. So we have lots and lots of projections, fears, and like how to behave in that situation, how to do that, how to navigate that. It's all based on control patterns that we developed in the Dark Ages. So many people still on the planet are using this, but they are not actually in reality. They are constantly living in the past. They're just projecting the past onto the current situation. And if they're acting on that, they're not acting in the current situation. They're acting on the analysis of the past. So you meet a person and you think something about them. And you start talking to them like you think you know them. But it's all based on past experiences in this database of ours, of projections. Like a cache on a website, you know. So maybe the website actually updated, but your browser is still showing you the old one. So you navigate the old version without even knowing. You have to clear the cache to see the new one. And this is a bit how it is with, you feel a person, you feel all their energies. That's actually the real person. And you can act on that. You can act on your feeling, or you can act on the perception, the projection, the assumptions, which are never true because they're always based in past experience. So the fear is part of that. It's just old fears for tigers or whatever. But we can bypass all of that and live just heart to heart and connect heart to heart instead of on acting on the assumptions.
So the world around us today, how many people are acting due to how they feel versus what projections or perceptions they have.
Yeah, maybe 1 million people or maybe 10 million people. It's difficult to know. I mean, many of them write books. Many of them are spiritual leaders. But I think it's also many, many people living just incognito, just flowing through life. Maybe they're like a gardener somewhere. So I don't know the exact statistics.
Well, there probably isn't one, frankly. No one's ever got the data, but it strikes me that at least the experience you just described of being able to feel someone before you actually physically see them, and I would assume a very, very small percentage of people are living with that as their reality. Indeed, today is possibly the first time I've ever heard that was even an option. But as soon as you mentioned it, I kind of knew it was true, which is really weird. I'm like, I so fucking knew that. And it's because you felt it, right?
You felt it, yeah.
Yeah, you could feel something was going to happen, and it did. Whoa. And so let's say the whole of society functions like that, and you're implying that Atlantis did function like that. What does daily life look like? Or like commerce or a relationship? Like it's totally different, surely.
But I've experienced this in bilocation a lot, and then I'm also experiencing it more and more in physical reality because I get more and more friends living in this way. The center of every person is just peace and neutrality. So you don't have this needing, wanting. It's just that sort of the center of each being. And then the energy is moving towards a certain location or event or a person. So that's how you've been guided in life. So you feel your energy or you see your energy moving towards one group of people. And you can feel your energy stabilizing in that group of people. So it's almost like you're experiencing it before it happens. And then you get the amazing gift of also experiencing it with your physical body. Because then when the field is tuned, when the interaction with them is like, now it's perfect time, then your body just sort of goes there in joy. Because it's the place where you should be. Like if you go there and if you interact with these people, you are exactly at the right time, at the right place. And you know probably from yourself, when you feel that you're in the right place at the right time, you feel like $1 million. Because it's just, this is where I'm supposed to be. This is what I'm supposed to do. This is when we feel one with the universe. And you want to feel one with the universe. So you just wait for the next sort of, here's a podcast. Okay. And then just waiting for the field to calibrate and now it's good. Let's go. So I operate like this all the time, coming to this podcast and knowing when to go here. So I allow the energy to go before my physical body.
It's interesting as well to reflect on what you mentioned at the very start of the conversation, Sam, about how, over the 25 years you've been working on the question of what is this inner world or this inner reality versus external reality. It's like a compounding process of I assume, a lot of trial and error, like figuring things out, and that kind of worked and that didn't work. And even in this conversation we've had today, it's been unbelievable, some of the insights that you've landed on. It's kind of like, whoa, you need a bit of time to digest it almost. Like, wow, what was that concept or this concept? And so when someone's listening to this, they're like, wow, these guys are talking about some fruity shit. Like, how do you recommend to someone to start the discovery process, to begin to perhaps incorporate, could I call these philosophies or life operating systems? I wouldn't even quite know how to describe it, but how do you begin the process of incorporating this stuff into your life? What's the best advice you might give someone to start the journey?
Yeah, if you think that this sounds interesting, it's a life experience that you can't get in the matrix. It's where the whole world becomes aligned. I mean, I can be out walking and a portal just opens up in the forest, and I'm invited into this multidimensional city. So for a normal person, it would just be a forest. But you see, it's like the whole world is magical, and it has these portals and hidden treasures everywhere. And if you're interested in expanding your life experience in this direction, then it's important to understand that your current life situation is just a house of mirrors. So everyone around you is just mirroring your own traumas. So you're trapped in your own, your external reality is just shown to you through all the interactions and everything that happens. Mm. Like Truman Show. Mm. So to poke a hole in this, because I understand it can be very difficult to start with meditation, and it might take like 10 years to do it on your own. So what if you want to step out of this echo chamber or house of mirrors, you need someone that has already stepped out of it. They can help you to navigate, because you need to clear all of those things, all of the things in the house of mirrors. So I think that's probably from today, if I look at what's the most effective way, it's not meditation by yourself, because it's too difficult. It's you need someone else to give the this higher frequency. So just find someone that you're attracted to, someone that you think is nice. And then your frequency will start changing, and then your house of mirrors will start changing. Yeah, I think that's what I've answered today.
If I may, one final question, which ties back into what you just suggested, but this idea that a certain frequency enables access to another life, another world, or different data sets or bits of information. And so how you just described about, like, maybe find someone nearby who you get attracted to that helps to raise your vibration. Like, why is it the case that that then opens up all these other opportunities?
It's about a resonance. So this, a person with a higher frequency is allowing you to, because like in my field, I don't have fears. Like, I live without fears. Okay. So every now and then
already very compelling, right? Like, Whoa. I mean, that sounds cool. How do I do that?
Because if it comes in, I just tune the field. So it's fear field. And then I just look at it because I'm not afraid of it. So I look at it and then it melts away.
Like dissolves almost with your attention. Interesting.
But if we identify with it, we amplify it. But I do the opposite. A fear comes in, I just look at it and it melts away. So then I can then do this for another person. So this person then is experiencing himself without fears. Maybe a little bit what you did in the beginning, what we did. So it's like, so, and that's a purer version. That's a high frequency version of yourself. So it's like just melting away the fears, and you experience how it is to be your true self or a closer version to your true self. And then that person is able to experience that. This is, it's possible to feel like this. Ah, if I don't have fears, I actually want to do this instead. So it's like a person of a higher frequency is able to pull up a person to a similar frequency. And then this person experiences this. And then you go away, it goes down again. And then you come up and you go up again. And you, so it's like a future version of yourself. So when you step up, it becomes part of you. Like, oh, this is how it feels. This is your future version, and you get used to it. And every time you get used to it, it becomes more and more of a reality. So then you sort of stop going down and you stay up here.
Normalizes. Cool. Wow. Well, Sam, thank you. I'll have to listen back to so many things that you mentioned. It was fascinating learning from you. Thank you very much for your time today. If someone wants to reach out and get in touch with you, what's the best way they can do that?
Yeah, my website, flowsam.com. It's probably good.
Okay, cool. And we'll make sure to link that in the show notes as well. Well, Sam, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
No, thank you for inviting me. Nice to speak to
My
you.
pleasure.